debate. It's a lost art form, especially in regards to soccer during the internet age. This is why the First 11 exists. The First 11 pits pseudo-soccer journalists against each other in a battle for the ages. Here, the week's arbitrarily named top 11 American soccer issues are laid out. Our panelists pick a side and debate ensues. There are no winners. There are no losers. There are no points awarded. There is just reverently irreverent discourse over primarily ridiculous topics that deserve our discussion, or at least rambling opinions of the otherwise ignored. So prepare to be simultaneously amused and aggrieved. This is The First 11. Welcome to the second ever episode of The First 11 podcast. Now we've got a Twitter account, and we've got a fancy new theme. This is Abram Chamberlain here with Evan Ream to discuss the 11 most importantest topics in American soccer. How's life, Evan?
It's awesome, I guess. Really excited for the second 11 today. So these might not be as good as our 11 were last week. You know, pretty hard to top what we did last week, not going to lie. But we'll do our best, and we'll make the most of the reserves, and it's only going to get worse from here.
Okay, with our pleasantries out of the way, let's get started with our first 11.
Number one.
Oklahoma City is finding itself right now at what I would consider the apex of the battle between USL Pro and the NASL. Currently, there are two competing organizations starting teams there the same year. So number one in the first 11 states. It is good for Oklahoma City to have two competing soccer teams entering minor league soccer the same year.
I agree with this. I think it's awesome. The more soccer, the better. It can't be bad. I think Oklahoma is an interesting market. I don't think MLS should ever look there. But can you imagine if these two teams met in the U.S. Open Cup in their first year? Something like that would be incredible. And even though they don't play in the same league, a chance of a derby would be amazing. And there would be more opportunities for fans to get involved with the sport in a sport-starved market.
I truthfully disagree with this. I never think it's good for two teams to saturate the same market. If you look at Los Angeles with Chivas USA and the LA Galaxy, there's clearly only one show in town. That's the Galaxy. If you look at New York, essentially New York FC, and you look at Red Bull New York, there's already a fear that one of those is going to be the show, one of those is going to be the backup. NASL is in a much better position than USL Pro right now. USL Pro is nothing more than, at this point, a reserve league for MLS. However, both of these teams have claimed that they do want to have MLS looking at them. As you said, I don't think the market for Oklahoma City works as an MLS market. So I don't really think that two teams entering at the same time works at all. I think it's too much of too little in the same city.
Number two.
In an 11-year professional career spanning many different countries and continents, Freddie Adu has played for 9 different club soccer teams, many for just 1 year. He is about to be released from his most recent club team, Bahia in Brazil, where he only made 5 first-team appearances. Number two on the first 11 says Freddie Adu's best bet would be joining the recently reclamated Danny Zatella in the NASL, possibly with the New York Cosmos.
I disagree with this. And maybe this is me looking at Freddie Adu back with all the hype that I remember when he first came into MLS. I don't think he's coming back to MLS. I think he burned too many bridges in Philadelphia. The best portion of his career was probably when he was playing in the second division in Turkey. A better opportunity for him than joining the second division in America, the NASL, where, quite frankly, everyone's going to be laughing at him as a failure, would be to attempt to make a move over maybe in a second division in England, maybe in a second division in Spain, possibly even trying to find another team in Brazil. He's not made for MLS, and if he's not made for MLS, he's definitely not made for the NASL either. The Cosmos would love to have him because, despite everything, he's probably still the second or maybe third most known name in American soccer. NASL is just not right for Freddie Adu, not in the style of play, not with that certain team, and not with Danny Zatella, even though I love saying that name.
I think it would be great for Freddie Adu to join NASL, specifically the New York Cosmos. You saw what it did for Danny Zatella's career this year. He was just a guy on the street, and he came in and he started for a championship team. Freddie Adu has proven in his career that he either cannot or does not want to take care of the defensive responsibilities on the field in order to be a impact player in any league. I think that Freddie Adu's career, his best bet for a career now would be as a super sub for anyone, where you're losing in the game and you need 15 minutes in 15 minutes left and you're down a goal. You need someone to come on and you need someone to create something. That could be Freddie Adu's niche. He's not going to be a regular starter for anyone, including the U.S. national team, or especially the U.S. national team. I think right now he could get regular minutes with a team in the NASL. He is good enough to do that, and he can maybe provide some attacking quality and draw some fans to one of the most popular teams in that league.
Here's my question, based on your argument. Do you think that it's better for Freddie Adu or it's better for the New York Cosmos?
I think it's good for both of them. I think it's nice, or it would be nice for Freddie Adu to take a step down in the league. You know, he had some good moments when he was with the Philadelphia Union, but the problem was he was a designated player, and he is not worth designated player money. I think Freddie Adu could be on and be a good contributor to an MLS team, but he wants more money than he is actually really worth. It's all a name thing. You know, he's only 24 years old. He still has years left, but I don't know how much of an impact he's going to be, and I think he could succeed at an NASL team with deep pockets like the New York Cosmos.
And it's interesting. I look at Freddie Adu as someone who's just way overhyped, has always been overhyped, and will continue to be overhyped. The fact that people – you mentioned that he has no place in the U.S. men's national team in the future, and I think there are still people out there. I remember reading on MLSsoccer.com people in the forum saying – he is the missing link for the U.S. men's national team. He's not. He hasn't been for a while. I don't think he's the link for the U.S. men's national team. I don't think he's the link for the New York Cosmos. I think he's better off with his style of game heading someplace outside of NASL, which is less technical, less savvy, and less tactical than MLS.
Well, everything you read on the internet is true, so I disagree with you.
Number three.
Last weekend, the NASL had its championship game between the New York Cosmos and the Atlanta Silverbacks. The Atlanta Silverbacks finished second to last in the table in the fall season despite winning the spring season. The New York Cosmos only played half a season. Our number three in the first 11 says, the New York Cosmos winning NASL Soccer Bowl is good for that league.
I completely disagree. NASL does not see itself as a minor league. NASL wants to challenge with MLS for the top division in the United States. If they want to challenge MLS, they're going to need to do things that MLS doesn't do, namely, you know, make some joke decisions. Like MLS has the issue with transparency. NASL has a champion that only played half the season. That's completely ridiculous if NASL wants to be the caliber of league MLS is, or even better than MLS is, which I think they do. I just can't agree. I can't agree that it was good that New York Cosmos won the Soccer Bowl.
If you have the biggest market in the world, and you have the biggest team name in American soccer, and I have no doubt that NASL went to the split season just to get the Cosmos in earlier, them winning the Soccer Bowl is good for that league. It draws the attention. If you look at many of the Twitter accounts coming out, it says something along the lines of, the New York Cosmos win their sixth ever Soccer Bowl. Granted, it's not the same team. That's sort of like saying, if Rangers won the SPL next year, that the Rangers won however many things they'd won. I don't think it's ridiculous, and I don't think it's bad for the league. I actually think that getting that New York market in there, especially as they are trying to compete with Red Bull, and more importantly, they're trying to compete with that NYCFU. I'm staying with that. I think it's very good for NASL. I think, as you said, they're trying to be that big league, that important league, that bigger than MLS league. And the only name in American soccer which is bigger than the biggest name in MLS, which is probably the LA Galaxy, is the New York Cosmos. So the Cosmos winning is good for that league. With that, we'll be taking a break. We're going to come back to talk MLS Cup, MLS market size, New York Red Bull, and a secret topic from Mr. Evan Rain.
Welcome back from the break. I'm sure there are tens of you out listening to this beautiful, beautiful podcast. We're going to get right back into things.
Number four.
LA Galaxy are out. New York Red Bulls, out. Seattle Sounders, out. Number four on the first 11 says that Don Garber woke up in cold sweats on Friday, that is last Friday, due to the market sizes of MLS's final four teams in the playoffs, sans Houston, which is debatable if that's really a big market or not.
I disagree with that, and there's strange reasons why I disagree with that. First off, MLS is not going to get big ratings no matter what. Regardless of market size, regardless of anything else, it's just not going to happen. And as you said, it's sort of debatable whether or not Houston is a big market. But if you look at the teams that are left, honestly, sans Houston, you've got Portland. That's the media darling of MLS right now. You've got Sporting Kansas City. That's the reclamation project of MLS right now. You've got RSL, who are possibly the prettiest team in MLS. Any one of those three, and to an extent Houston, who does have some things going for them, are going to pack their stadiums, are going to have good crowds, are going to have good atmosphere for MLS's TV broadcast, even if no one's watching it. Don Garber needs to realize that LA, New York, Seattle, it's not going to make a hell of a difference as far as television ratings are concerned. He needs to be happy with what he has, which are three teams, Portland, Kansas City, and RSL, which are three teams that are going to fill their stadiums, which are three teams that are going to put on good shows, which are three teams that are fun to watch and could do something positive for the league, even if it's not improve their terrible television rating.
I have to disagree with what you're saying. I think Henry being out, Tim Cahill being out, Robbie Keane is out, Landon Donovan is out, Clint Dempsey is out, Shalry Joseph is out, Obafemi Martins is out, Eddie Johnson is out. These are all big names, except for Shalry Joseph, who is a massive name, not a big name. Massive in the same way the Columbus Crew is massive. These are names that MLS wants in its playoffs, you know? If you have an Alvaro Saborío scoring a game-winning goal in your league, it doesn't make the same headlines in the United States that it would if Thierry Henry or Robbie Keane scores the game-winning goal in an MLS Cup final. I just don't see it. Furthermore, having Salt Lake host the, I love watching Salt Lake. I could not agree with you more saying that Salt Lake is a very beautiful team to watch. The problem is the majority of the population of Salt Lake City could fit in Estadio Azteca. I mean, it's there are so few people in Salt Lake. I think it's definitely a success story, but I think that the franchise is a success story in itself. I just don't think it's good overall for the league if all those big teams are out. I would like to have seen at least one big market in the final for the sake of the league, not necessarily for the aesthetics of the game.
But we have Houston. That's a big market.
Yeah, they sell so many tickets. And do you know what the best thing about the Houston Dynamo is?
The fact that their stadium is so orange you can't look at it on television?
No, Glenn Davis. Glenn Davis is the best single-person announcer in MLS, and he's brought down by Eddie Robinson. I just threw my pen on the ground and it hit my dog because I'm so upset with Eddie Robinson's commentary performance in the Houston Dynamo versus Montreal Impact playoff game on Halloween. He said that Marco De Vaio was uncharacteristically offside. He led the league in offside. Marco De Vaio has as many offsides in his career as Landon Donovan. One of them's played like 13 years longer than the other in MLS. It's ridiculous.
Number five.
Red Bull finally comes in cups, or at least shields. The most disenfranchised franchise in MLS history has finally won a competitive trophy. That said, Thierry Henry stated before the playoffs that it's all about the cup. Number five in our first 11 says, Red Bull New York season is a failure, despite winning the supporter shield.
I completely disagree. After 18 years of disappointment, of despair, of terrible managers, of over-the-hill players coming back into the league, Red Bull New York is finally a winner. They finished first in the league. They won the Supporters' Shield by scoring 5 goals against a team that needed to win to make the playoffs. It was an incredible performance. The crowd was amazing. I don't think it's that big of a deal. The fans, to me, seem like they're still happy. They're going to be in the Champions League next year. There are a lot of positives other than Thierry Henry's clutch play in this league that can be looked upon that are successful. No one can make fun of Red Bull New York for not having a trophy anymore, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, I'm still making fun of them. I completely agree with this one. Red Bull only comes in cans, comes in cans, comes in cans. Red Bull only comes in cans, and sometimes it comes in shields. They still have no cups. Let's be perfectly honest about that. Henri saying, as I stated in the intro, that it was all about the cup, that's the most important trophy in MLS. And this is coming from a guy who on Pickup Soccer stated, I think that it would be a bigger deal to win the Supporters' Shield and U.S. Open Cup than it would be to win MLS Cup. If you don't win MLS Cup in a market like New York, no one cares. You're not going to get a ticker tape parade through Manhattan, through Harrison, or through Newark for winning the Supporters' Shield. Because everyone is looking for you to win a cup, to win a trophy, because this is America, and it is all about playoffs. So most people outside of the hardcore New York supporter groups are probably looking at this season as a failure for that club.
Number six.
So to preface this, my co-host Abram Chamberlain knows absolutely nothing about this topic. I have chosen something completely at random. Actually, I just saw it on Twitter the other day, and I'm going to cold read it to him, I guess. I have not read this before. He has no idea what I'm going to ask, and then he's going to agree or disagree with it.
It's and I'm covering like my eyes.
Like, are you outgoing? Do you like to show off your dance moves? If so, this is the perfect job for you. The New England Revolution are currently seeking an individual to serve as our mascot, Slide. It is imperative that candidates have very flexible hours, as they will be used for community appearances and act as an ambassador for the team. You'll need a strong stage presence, high energy, the ability to improvise, and a little bit of swagger. You also need to be comfortable in confined spaces and dealing with crowds. Number six on the first 11 says that the first 11's own Abram Chamberlain should pack his bags and move back to Boston to become the next New England Revolution mascot.
I absolutely disagree.
What?
Not because I don't want to move back to Boston. I would kill to move back to Boston. I love Boston. I hate Slide. I hate the Musketeers. I hate the Rev Girls. I hate all of these, for lack of a better word, NFL items that are forced upon MLS teams. For those of you who don't know what the Musketeers are, it's a group of men who stand around and shoot their muskets off every time the Revolution score a goal. Some people love them. They're a Patriots hand-me-down. I hate them. No one that I know loves the Rev Girls, which are essentially a dance team cheerleading squad that neither dances nor cheers for the New England Revolution. They just walk around with a t-shirt cannon and every once in a while try to get people in the morgue, which is the non-fort, to do chants. Slide I don't hate, but I don't love the idea of mascots. And this may be an American soccer, or sorry, not an American soccer, but just a soccer traditionalist thing. I would never, ever dress up in any sort of outfit like that to cheer on a team where I could rather be either A, watching in front of my TV drunk, or standing in the fort drunk and yelling ridiculous things that make no sense. I would never dress up for a Slide, and I don't think anyone should. I think this is a tradition that the Revolution should kill off instead of refilling.
How dare you, Abram? How dare you? You know what? I'll go as far to say, F*** you. Yeah, you're gonna have to beep that out, Abram. You heard it here first. Abram doesn't want to support his team, the New England Revolution. He's not a big enough fan to even live in whatever New England state they play in. No one is sure.
So you're telling me that you're okay with cheerleaders and mascots and things like that at soccer games?
No, I'm just telling you that I don't think it's okay that you're a fake Revolution fan.
You're an
I've never claimed anything but.
All right. Anything but. All right.
Number seven.
MLS Live may be the best invention of the digital age. That way, people like me who live out of the home market of the team they love are still able to follow those teams. With that in mind, number seven in the first 11 states that MLS Live may actually be bad for MLS's moribund television ratings.
I completely disagree. Well, it probably is bad for the television ratings, but I think it's good for the league. MLS Live isn't the best invention in the digital era. It's the best invention of any era. I would not be a fan of this league like I am if MLS Live was not available. Back in the day, 2006, 2007, whatever, you could watch the stream for free. I got all my friends hooked on these crappy 20 kilobyte streams or whatever really low number exaggeration can sound good. But I that's how I became a fan of this league. I was able to watch every single game I wanted to. I would often watch every single game in a weekend back when there were only 4 or 5 games each weekend. And I could do it all from the comfort of my own home. MLS Live is something that needs to be there so that MLS's demographic, which are young, tech-savvy people, can access the games without having to be able or without having to be restricted to local and national TV broadcasts.
I don't disagree with you as far as it being good for the league. It's definitely good for the league. But I'm looking at this from the angle of, is it bad for the television ratings? I think it absolutely is. You and I probably, I can't speak for you, but I can definitely speak for me. If there is a game on NBC, I'll watch it. Not that I have a Nielsen box or anything. I used to have a Nielsen box, and I still watched every single game. But your average MLS fan, I'm talking about someone who's willing to pay the, what is it, 60 or so bucks for MLS Live, may skip a nationally televised game in order to watch their local team. There have been several times where there's been a game on ESPN, but it coincides with the Revolution game. So I end up watching the Revolution game on MLS Live as opposed to watching the MLS game that is on ESPN or NBC Sports, which, oddly enough, is a network I do not get. I did, as I mentioned before, I had a Nielsen box. Two years ago, I had a Nielsen box. And there were probably times where I was watching a Revolution game on MLS Live where I could have been watching, I don't know, Philadelphia Union versus FC Dallas. Now, is my one Nielsen box going to be turned on and going to improve the MLS ratings? Probably not a lot. But if there's enough people... Yeah, it probably would, to be honest, and that's kind of scary. But it does hurt the league's overall television ratings. I don't know if MLS should necessarily drop MLS Live, and I know the blackout dates are a pain in the butt, but they do need to take into consideration. If they're looking at the television ratings as a way to increase the amount of money that the league is drawing in so that they can increase the player quality, so that they can increase people watching the game, they do need to take a look at how MLS Live is working.
I have one question for you.
Yes, sir.
Did you have a Nielsen box back when you lived in a real estate?
I did. I had it when I lived in Boston. If I had a Nielsen box in Alabama, I would make sure that I watched MLS games on TV every time they would, because then they'd be like, 100% of the population in Alabama is watching MLS on ESPN right now, because there's probably only about 8 Nielsen box in all of Alabama. So hopefully our ratings improve more than MLS's with MLS Live. We will see whether it does or not. We're going to take a break. We'll come back to talk where the MLS Cup winner is going to come from, where the Champions League spot should come from, if you should move to Spain to play soccer, and the inevitable Keller versus Friedel discussion of Sean Johnson versus Bill Hamid.
I like to welcome some people back from the break. We had some technical difficulties during it. Technical being that Abram could not stop laughing at something really stupid I said.
Number 8.
The last 4 MLS Cup winners have been from the Western Conference, though the Colorado Rapids actually won the Eastern Conference in 2010. Number 8 is that MLS Cup winner will come out of the Western Conference.
I disagree. If you look at the teams that are left in each conference, you've got Portland and RSL, who are probably the teams that more people want to see win it. What you have in the East are these sort of rough, rugged, defense in your face teams that will eke out a 0-0 draw and just pound each other into submission. If there's one thing I hate about cup competitions, it's that kind of soccer. The reason is that is the type of soccer that wins cup competitions. Houston got taken advantage of by a much better LA Galaxy team in the last 2 seasons. I have this deep, dark feeling that, much to everyone's chagrin, they are Sporting Kansas City may actually win this match because they have the depth, they have the bodies, they have, for lack of a better word, the violence to go out there and crush the spirits of RSL in Portland. I'm not sure who won the matchups between Portland and Sporting Kansas City or Portland and Houston this year because I don't believe in research. But I do know that RSL did beat Sporting Kansas City, and they beat them at their own game. However, after playing Portland, I could easily see RSL coming out, maybe being a little tired, and taking really a thorough smackdown from either Houston or Sporting Kansas City. These are two teams who are good at one-offs. These are two teams that are good at, and I can't think of a better word, I really wish I could, these are two teams that are better at physically assaulting softer opponents.
I don't believe in research either, but I want to tell you that off the top of my head, Portland beat Kansas City 3-2 in Kansas City and beat Houston 2-0 in Portland. I have no idea what happened with Real Salt Lake because I really like to watch Portland, and Real Salt Lake complains justifiably so that they're never on TV, which they aren't. I think that Portland and Salt Lake are too good for the Eastern Conference teams. Portland finished with, I believe, 1 point fewer than Kansas City. Like I said, do not believe in research once again. Either that or I don't just want to disrupt the flow of this podcast. Both teams, Portland and Salt Lake, finished comparably to Sporting Kansas City, who finished second in the league. Both of those teams played harder teams in the Western Conference, not counting Chivas USA. Houston got to play DC United 3 times. DC United is so bad. And what I'm trying to say here is that I just think that Portland and Salt Lake are the number one and number two in some order in the top four teams left. I believe one of those teams will win MLS Cup, and it's going to be Portland.
Sporting Kansas City, if they win, will host MLS Cup, correct?
Correct.
And I believe that, well, actually, outside of Portland, that's probably the best support left in the league, correct?
Is New York out of it?
New York is out of it.
What about Seattle?
Yeah, Seattle's gone too.
Okay, then yeah.
All right. I do think there's a home field advantage. I do think they have strikers who, in the right moment, can finish it. I just look at Sporting Kansas City, and I look at their rotation of center backs, and I look at their rotation of
bad forwards.
Thugs, I guess, would be the words I would use for some of their defensive midfielders. And for the same hand, I look at Houston, and I see the same sort of thing. RSL can play a very pretty game. But RSL, and I stick by it, and I'll stick by it until they prove me wrong, cannot win big games. Portland might surprise me. I'm not sure what to take out of Portland yet, just because they haven't been in that ultimately huge spot. And when they were last week, they got crushed by RSL. So it's going to come down to me, at least, to what happens in this second leg of the Sporting Kansas City-Houston match. If Sporting Kansas City pulls off a win, they may become my favorite for MLS Cup. If Houston wins, I think it's a toss-up.
You heard it here. Mind of Abram. Abram Chamberlain is rooting for Sporting Kansas City because they have Benny Failhaber and Seth Sinovic.
I'll cheer for Seth, but face.
Number 9.
Speaking along the lines of championships and Champions League, as we all know, CCL is not exactly UEFA Champions League, whether we want it to or not. People are quickly falling out of love with this tournament. On Sunday, news leaked from Keith Hickey at Goal.com that the U.S. soccer was thinking of redistributing the qualifying spots from CCL, that either the MLS Cup runner-up or the U.S. Open Cup winner would not qualify automatically for CCL. Number 9 in our first 11 says, qualification for CONCACAF Champions League should be altered.
I disagree. I think when you say that people aren't interested in the tournament, you mean you. People means you. I'm completely so interested in this tournament. I'm really excited to see San Jose, LA, and Kansas City in the quarterfinals of this tournament next year. I think I'm even going to try and travel to Tijuana for the LA Galaxy Tijuana leg. Hopefully I don't get shot. I think that this qualification process is fine. You know, like you were talking about earlier in this podcast, that you think that MLS Cup is the most important trophy. That means that the qualification spots, there should be one for each trophy, plus a second one for the most important trophy, which is MLS Cup. Both MLS Cup winners should get spots by virtue of being there, and so should the Supporters Shield winner and the best team in the league, which is usually the U.S. Open Cup winner.
So in your so you're saying that the winner of U.S. Open Cup, MLS Cup winner, Supporters Shield, basically keep the spots as they are.
Yeah, and I just want to clarify, my best team in the league U.S. Open Cup thing was a joke about DC United.
Yeah, I figured as much.
Okay.
Actually, I didn't figure as much, but now that you say that, it's totally clear. I do like CCL, but there are a lot of complaints out there from much larger people in the American soccer hemisphere than us that CCL is turning into a big joke. I do think that there should be an alteration towards how CCL is set up. I like Supporters Shield getting it, and I do like MLS Cup winners getting it, and I obviously like U.S. Open Cup getting maybe not an automatic bid, but possibly a play-in round or however that's working now. I would prefer, if we're doing unbalanced schedules, shouldn't the East and the West both get a spot? So your Supporters Shield and then the winner of the other conference? That would make more sense to me. I like CCL. I don't like how bad MLS is at it, but I do think if we change the format of it, especially the qualification, a little bit, it would be better for the league, it would be better for CONCACAF, and it would be better for that particular tournament, even though it's turning into kind of a joke.
Number 10.
I don't know if you knew this was a thing, Abram, but it seems as if lately some people are taking, for whatever reason, they just think maybe it's a better soccer developing country, or, you know, maybe people play soccer better than the best country in the world, which is the United States. People are moving to Spain. Number 10, our most important point, the number 10, the playmaker. Number 10 on the first 11 says that people are moving their entire family to Spain in order for their child to play at the Barcelona Academy or other similar academies. Number 10 on the first 11, which I'm going to mention a million times apparently, number 10 says that this is the next inevitable step for American soccer.
I think I agree with this, once you got through it. This is spurring from an article off the New York Times about, and I'm sure I'll butcher his name, Ben, it's either Lederman or Letterman, and I'm not sure which it is. He is right now looked at as a possible player for Barcelona. We want our players in the best academies in the world. MLS academies may get there eventually, but right now, they're not. If you look at who we're most excited for, it's Ben Lederman, who is playing for the Barcelona Academy. It's, when he's not injured, Marco Pelosi, who's playing for, I believe it's the Liverpool Academy. We've got American players playing at Bayern Munich academies, or technically not academies, it's really their second teams in Julian Green. As we're looking at players moving overseas, it does seem like the next step. There may be a time where MLS academies match up with them, but that's not going to be for another 10, 15, maybe even 20 years. For now, I would rather have some of our best talents moving and going and playing with Barcelona in their academy, playing with a Liverpool or an Arsenal in their academy, possibly going to, and I'm going to say Ajax, even though I know that's wrong, playing in the Ajax Academy. And it should be Ajax. I'm not saying Ajax.
Ajax is soap, Abram. Ajax is soap. Ajax is a team in Amsterdam. I don't think it's a bad thing for youth players to be moving overseas, moving their whole families overseas to get better training. I just don't think that's the next inevitable step for American soccer. I think we will see most of our national team players come out of the MLS academies because that is the next step. MLS academies and the infrastructure that is currently being provided there are the clear and inevitable next step to youth development in the United States of America, the best soccer country in the world.
So I got a question for you. Is Bradenton dead?
Bradenton's been dead since 2001.
So that's an inevitable yes.
Yes. I mean, Bradenton has had its merits, but, you know, it's better for the kids now, I think, to remain in the town that they live in, where they grew up, building their futures with their teammates, and then hopefully graduating to the first team with the same set of guys rather than bringing just the best 40 players. There are over 300 million people in this country. To have to choose only 40 under 17-year-olds and have them train together is A, a waste of money, and B, just too few of guys. There are just too few of guys. they need to go local and they need to go MLS academies.
Well, I do think it's interesting now with MLS academies starting to actually produce players who are worthwhile. You've got Andy Nahar out of DC. You've got Bill Hamid, who we'll talk about in a moment, out of DC. Diego Fagundes in New England. Juan Agudelo from New York, and then Chivas, and then New England, although from the New York Academy. So we'll see how that ultimately turns out.
You can't not mention my guy, DeAndre Yedlin.
Oh, Yedlin. That's right. Yedlin and Scott Caldwell and Zardes. So there are, I guess they are starting to pump out a few of these younger players who are worthwhile. Was Rio Real an academy player as well?
I don't know, but don't put Yedlin in the same sentence as Zardes. Way better hair. Way better hair, first of all. Second of all, I don't know. I've got nothing. Who was the player you asked me about the academy? Which player? Villarreal?
Villarreal.
Yeah, he was the academy.
Okay, I thought he was. LA's got quite the academy going for them. All right.
Really?
Yeah.
Southern California, a big spot where a lot of Hispanic.
Apparently, there's a lot of people who know how to play soccer out there in California.
Mexico.
All right. Okay. North Mexico.
Number 11.
So, speaking of academy players and non-academy players, and that inevitable battle between where we're going, college or MLS academies. The recent roster for the U.S. men's national team came out. True to his word, Jurgen Klinsmann did not call in any of the MLS players who are still involved in the playoffs, although I think that's the opposite of his word originally.
Yep.
What he did, however, was call in Sean Johnson and Bill Hamid, two players who have not had the greatest of seasons, two players who were at least partially responsible for the U23 failures. Number 11 on our first 11 states, Sean Johnson is less batter than Bill Hamid.
I just want to clarify that Sean Johnson was not an academy player. He was actually a fourth round draft pick, which may have been confusing to some of our listeners. I'm sure Abram knew that he wasn't. But a fourth round draft pick.
I mentioned college.
A fourth round draft pick. Do you know why he was a fourth-round draft pick, Abram? I'm not even going to let you answer. Because he's terrible. Bill Hamid is so much better than Sean Johnson. He just has a shit team. Seriously, that team sucks. DC United, they won 3 games this year. But Bill Hamid stood on his head multiple times, made tons of saves. Sometimes even saves, maybe a couple seasons past this was, but sometimes he even saves 2 penalty kicks in the same game against Portland, and they let him take a third one. My point is that Bill Hamid is a more commanding presence. He makes fewer bad judgment calls when coming off of his line, and he is that English Premier League type of box-controlling goalkeeper that we always seem to start on our, and by our, I mean U.S. national team. I'm totally not a fan. I'm an objective journalist.
Hey, just out of curiosity, who actually won a game for the U.S. our competitive game for the U.S. men's national team senior team? Oh, that's right. Sean Johnson. Sean Johnson won one.
Good goalkeeper.
Sean Johnson won one in Connecticut in front of a pseudo-packed house in a game that mattered in the Gold Cup with the senior team. Bill Hamid is, done all right with the U23s and, in random halves has looked all right. And then you look even further, whose, team came closer to making the playoffs? Oh, that's right, Sean Johnson. His back line was equally as bad as Bill Hamid's. The big difference is Bill Hamid did not have Mike McGee. So Mike McGee was able to cover up a lot of the failings of Chicago. Chicago and DC were probably two of the worst teams in MLS this year. Sean Johnson is one of the best shot stoppers that I've seen in MLS in quite a while. Bill Hamid is a freak. Sean Johnson is a super freak.
Both don't have good connotations in this sense. I think we could argue that both of them are not good, but I want to point out this. Which one of them won a trophy this year? My second point about this is you cannot call a back line bad if they have Davis California's own Jahlil Anibaba on them. That guy only allowed, his back line only allowed 3 goals in the entire Davis High Soccer 2007 season. His goalkeeper was terrible that year. Trust me, I could have been the goalkeeper.
So Bill Hamid won a trophy this year. What trophy did he win?
Open Cup.
Oh, you know what trophy Sean Johnson won this year? Gold Cup.
Oh,
I rest my case.
You, Abram.
We are We're going to set, point, match. Sean Johnson is less batter than Bill Hamid.
I think the point that we should really express now is that we would, and I'm sure you can agree with this, we would like to see neither of them in any time in the near future for any games of soccer.
Give them 10 years. 10 years.
10 years.
10 years. One of them might be the future, but hopefully Zach McMath improves enough where he can supersede both of them.
No. All right, that guy's name? Cody Cropper?
Oh, Jesus. This is Abram Chamberlain, a.k.a. At the Mind of Abram on Twitter, with Evan Ream, who is simply at Evan Ream on Twitter. What's that?
We plugging things last
week? We always plug things. It's all about plugging. You've got our podcast, which is now on. It's at First 11 Pod. You can follow our pseudo network at the AASP, which stands for All American Soccer Podcast. We may even have our own iTunes page. If not, feel free to rate us, preferably based on last week's, because this one is going to be interesting once it's edited down.
Got this anything one's gonna be for amazing.
Our? You got anything for our dozens and dozens of listeners, Evan?
There are tens. There are ones of them. You know, I don't know if this is my part where I'm supposed to like have a final word thing or plug anything.
Absolutely.
I'm looking forward to Mexico versus New Zealand. This is going to be very interesting. I just, you know, it's like, what was it like? It's like Toronto FC, right? I can't look away. I just can't. I never can look away from Toronto FC, from train wrecks, car crashes, and anything else that would be a, you know, creative pop culture reference. The rapper Cannabis, who is in our original list of First 11. I'm looking forward to that game. I made a joke about not being a real journalist, but I just got hired at the Davis Enterprise to do some sports writing. So if you guys like high school sports, you should still follow me. And then next year I can, I'll have the beat for the women's Davis High women's high school team. So that's what I have to plug. At Evan Ream. Take it away, Abram. Take us to our inevitable end of the series of our podcast. The series finale.
The series finale. All right, tune in again next week or the week after or whenever for the next First 11.
From the Western Conference.
Oh, you gotta welcome people back from break.
No, the people. Last four MLS Cup winners have been from the Western Conference.